Well, good evening. Welcome to the May 15th meeting of the Planning Commission. And we will go ahead and start with introductions. Over on our far left, please.
Jim Spencer, South Kitsap. Spencer Stegman, North Kitsap.
Richard Shattuck, Central Kitsap.
Tom Nevins, North Kitsap.
Gina Vestberg, Central Kitsap.
Robert Baglio, South Kitsap. We have an adoption of the agenda. Is there a motion for the adoption of the agenda as presented?
I move to adopt the agenda.
Second?
I'll second that.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Next, approval of the minutes. So in front of you, you have the minutes from May 2nd. I assume you've all taken a look at them. Is there a motion for approval?
I move to approve the minute.
Second.
Discussion? All right, all those in favor? Looks like it's unanimous. Next item is the work study. Minor. Title 15 update. Kathleen Barnhart.
Kathleen Barnhart, planner, Kitsap County Department of Community Development. Yes, relative to the next item on the agenda, this is minor. So what we have before you now are the Title 15, which is our flood code. These are amendments to remain compliant with FEMA's regulations and so that we can maintain our flood insurance for our citizens of Kitsap County. There are changes in definitions that are consistent with what FEMA has them defined as. As you'll recall, we are required, we got a little bit of an extension. It was supposed to be done early February. FEMA allowed us to adopt these changes in coordination with our critical areas ordinance update. So we reference Title 15 in 19.500 of the critical areas ordinance. So we want to make sure these changes are made before or along with our update to the critical areas ordinance. So the first part is a revision to the map reference. It's just changing their preferred language and saying instead of saying as amended, it's and any revisions thereto. The second definition revision is for basement, means any area of the building having its floor subgrade below ground level on all sides, which is much simpler than what is in code now.
So daylight basements don't apply?
It has to be on all sides.
Okay.
Correct. Third, we have a revised definition for breakaway walls. It's a wall that is not part of the structural support of the building and is intended through its design and construction to collapse under specific lateral loading forces without causing damage to the elevated portion of the building or supporting foundation system. This differs from what's on there now. It doesn't get into the types of materials, and it specifically calls out the lateral loading forces.
So question, seems like a year and a half ago or something like that, we went through floodplain, because wasn't it a federal update that took place?
Correct. And so what happened is that was phase one. This was intended to be a phase two process, and so the CEPA determination for that phase one also applies to this phase two. It was written such that it would cover this update as well. The reasoning is that when we did that update, the maps hadn't quite yet been adopted. And so this, as you'll see here on the fourth item, we revised the definition for coastal high hazard area, which now includes the V-zone, high velocity zone. So while we were doing this, FEMA was also, we noticed you also need to update these definitions to remain compliant.
Okay.
So as just discussed, the coastal high hazard area definition has changed. Move this up a little. So now it includes the VE or V zone in addition to the V1-30. And lastly, item number 5 is the revised definition partially. And just because we're still in sort of the moving around of definitions and we're not quite sure on the numbering yet, we're just simply referencing Title 19 rather than the specific section because we're not quite sure what that's actually going to be at this time.
So, you know, one item, I was dealing with this on a particular project, and the thing that's kind of odd is, you know, surveying-wise, there's two datums you can use, 1929 NGVD and then 1988. Mm-hmm. And this is all based upon the 88. Is that published anywhere? Because I don't, believe it or not, it's like a 3-point-something-foot difference between 1929 and 1988. And so it's rather confusing.
Yeah, and there are certain parts of the county that that have survey data still based on the 1929. So there is a chart, it's a conversion chart, mm-hmm. that the surveyors understand okay. in relation to that. But what we ask for is the NAVD 88 criterion to be provided to us
okay.
For survey points for flood certification. And so we asked for that if there's a correction that's needed because of the specific datum that's used for that survey point. We've asked for that correction to happen. Yeah. Okay. That's a good question.
That's all I have for that code update. Is there any other questions? So then we'll move forward with having this be part of a hearing during regular meeting.
All right. Well, I guess with that, we will move into our next minor item, deliberations critical areas ordinance. I think we play 15 minutes is what we're proposing for this. So, yes. Are you going to give us a quick briefing or do you want to go ahead and pass out the right guard or how do you think is best the way to start? Sorry.
There we go. So to start off, we're sitting down here in front of you today, one, so we can answer your questions if needed, but so that I can plug in and we can all see the screen. Completely up to you how you'd like to run this evening's or afternoon's meeting, but we do have the matrix. I do have a placeholder column there, so I can type in based on motions that are made so you can visually see what is being proposed. Some background. So we had our hearings, three of those hearings, and we have deliberation scheduled today and all day on the 23rd, I believe, beginning at 9 a.m. And following that, we have the findings of fact scheduled for June 6th. So we are still shooting for the final adoption date of June 30th, and we are looking to propose in the ordinance. It won't be in the matrix that you'll see here because it would be part of the ordinance, the adopting ordinance, a 90-day effective date. So it would be 90 days rather than some of the comments were suggesting 6 months, but we believe we can accomplish that in 90 days.
From June 1?
June 30th.
30th, I mean.
Or whenever, if they happen to adopt on the 28th or
okay. As
the case may be.
We could also set that for a date specific rather than doing a day count. We could say October 1st effective date, which would be comparable.
Okay. And with that?
Well, I guess what I was thinking, just so that we did understand what the staff position is on the items, because there's a handful of items going through the matrix I think staff was recommending making changes to. So maybe that's a good starting point. We come through that. Then once we understand what's being proposed to be added based upon the comments, then I think we just go section by section and then see who has comments on those particular sections. So if that's okay, we'll take it that way.
The staff introduction will not imply concurrence.
No.
Just be information purposes.
Mm-hmm. So with that, do you mind leading the way and going through the matrix and identifying the changes proposed after receiving comments from the public?
Yeah, so the first one we have up here is in 100.105, and this is an amendment based on the public comment to the policy goals. So we're adding on to policy goal 4, protect critical areas and their functions and values by regulating use and management within these areas and adjacent lands, while allowing for reasonable use and protection of property rights as provided for in state and federal law.
Now, I guess just to make sure, so the everyone have this last matrix in front of them? Okay. Questions? Okay.
Did you want to make motions as we go, or do you?
Well, I think we should probably, I guess, like I said, if we run through these and then if we go by section, we might have to return back and look at those individually, but that way, why don't we just run through these and then we'll go section-wise. Is that okay?
So I would also point out that we've made some changes to our proposed recommendations since you received the draft. So if I forget to point that out and you see something that's a little off, feel free to point that out. This is one of those examples. So under exemptions for agriculture, under 100.125, pre-existing and ongoing agriculture activities, we changed that to as defined in 19.150.290.
I can see I'm getting confused already. this is not the matrix I'm looking at, is it?
Right. The graph.
This, I can't read that, by the way. That type font is not making it for me.
Right.
So this is 100 and...
One of 121 of the draft title, is that what you're looking at?
All right, well, yeah, but I'm seeing here, there's a little bit of red down here.
Yeah.
Right there, that's what I'm not sure.
And ongoing agricultural activities.
So I just picked up this draft yesterday, so what I have is not.
Right.
No, and that's what I was just saying, that because that we've made some changes to our recommendations, mm-hmm. things will have shifted up or down, so the pages might be off, but the sections that I'm noting are going to be in that first left column in bold.
Okay, but you know, when you rattle off the number, like some people rattle off their phone number, like 60599, I don't get it. So, you know, it's going to have to slow down and make it in big print or something. I can't see that, and the process isn't going to work for me.
Well, I tell you what, I guess maybe let's go section by section. We'll take this with it. How's that sound? Okay? Because if we go through 121 pages,
right,
we're going to get bogged down.
I agree. Does this look better?
Is that view better? Is that big enough?
I can read that one.
Well, yeah, now I don't know what number it is.
Yeah, we'll have to rotate back and forth.
You have to tell us.
That's an exemption. Okay. And I see
it. Just matching up with what we have, that doesn't match up with what I've got in my packet. So 100, 125, we go over to the red highline. What I have isn't what you have on your screen.
Right, and that's my point, is that we have changed that since then as our recommendation based on some things like our legal feedback and review that we've received. So rather than having these defined in the definitions and in the exemptions, because that's what it was, is that we're essentially defining them in both places, we're just referencing the definitions, which we'll get to further down.
So how about this? What we'll do is we'll pretend like they're just another member of the Planning Commission. We'll take their comments like we're taking our comments for each individual section. How's that sound?
Perfect.
Okay?
Works for me.
Okay. Commissioner Barnhart.
And actually, just a quick tidbit. I spent the last week basically reviewing Whatcom County and Snohomish County's critical area ordinance. I believe Snohomish did it 2014 and Whatcom did it in 2016. And as far as their system goes, because obviously this is my first time on the Planning Commission, so I don't really know how this goes and operates. They did it a little bit differently. They uploaded their entire critical areas ordinance to a Word document that was editable basically by everybody who's on the Planning Commission as well as other groups. So it was basically one working document instead of like a matrix, a separate document, and going back and forth. So we'd basically just have one document to look at with all the revisions on the side and comments by the public, everything on the side, and we could adopt it or delete comments or anything on the side. So we just have one document instead of a matrix of other documents. And it, for me, it'd be a lot easier because I would have liked to see Richard's comments and Tom's amendments prior to this meeting, just because I'd like to have kind of an idea of what you're kind of getting at, what you'd like to change too. So I guess maybe in the future, if we could kind of work out like a system like this, because I feel like we're going to be really unorganized going back and forth throughout these definitions and amendments back and forth.
I actually don't think you can be sharing your comments back and forth outside of a public setting.
So they did it as they, so they uploaded the document to a Google Doc, which was a public document, but the only
right.
people who could edit it was people with usernames and passwords.
Okay.
And I'm pretty sure, I mean, that's what they did for their county, and it was compliant with the Open Meeting Act.
Okay. We'll see if we can do that. We haven't been really too successful within the department yet to pick up on some of the kind of common editing that various cloud-based features have to offer, like Box and
sure.
OneDrive and those kinds of things. We're working there.
Yeah, definitely. I just think it'd be so much easier to have it all on one page.
Sure.
Okay. Well, I guess then going back, we'll just go ahead and start 19.100, which is introduction and approval process. And we'll just go section by section. And if someone has a comment.
You're going to be working off the draft document then or the matrix?
I mean, working off the draft document with the lined out version is what I'm going to be looking at, right? Which is the draft document, but it has the lined items that the county was proposing to change from the prior one. Is that the one that you have? It's the one that we were provided by staff.
Okay. Now, I have a draft document, and I've got it all marked up, but it's the only draft document that I've ever had. Now, if there's another draft document that is beyond the
March 1st,
then, you know, I'm okay to go through with the draft document.
So I'm looking at public review draft 3117. Right? We're all working off the same document. Top left corner, Tom, public review document 3117. I think if you look on that. Yeah. Okay. So a good starting point. Should we take a break? Okay. So 19100.005, statement of purpose. Does anybody have any changes?
I do, actually. Yeah. So there was just kind of a lot of confusion during the public comment section regarding, you know, why we're here, what we're doing. And I just kind of wanted to expand on kind of the statement of purposes. I looked at Whatcom County and Snohomish County's statement, basically, and they didn't really use the terms. They do use the terms critical areas, but they go on to explain what a critical area is in their purpose statement. And judging just by the public comments, most of the people hadn't really read the glossary of terms to really understand what the functions and values are or what the critical areas are. So if we could just have those notated, I believe in front of me I have Whatcom counties, and they basically just, they say, you know, it's required by the Growth Management Act, but then they go a little bit further and say critical areas regulated under this chapter include geologically hazard areas, frequently flooded areas, critical aquifer recharge areas, and so on. So if we could just get that in the purpose so we could at least get people to read that and not be confused, I think it would be alleviate a lot of confusion.
Okay.
As well as in the goal statement, when you say function and values, which we'll actually get to in a later definition.
So I guess the thing with this is really we should be coming through and voting on each item as presented. So you're going to have to be a little more specific and actually make a motion for adoption or for discussion by the
okay.
commission.
Gotcha. So I guess I would like to define critical areas or move to define critical areas in the purpose statement of what they are, or at least refer to them as geologically hazard areas, frequently flooded areas, critical aquifer recharge areas, wetlands, and habitat conservation areas.
And you would put that in 19.000.105 statement of purpose?
Correct.
And you would put that as the first pair or the first sentence where after says Growth Manager Act of 1990 and then in essence list. Is that what you're proposing?
That is my proposal.
And that did include streams?
It can, it did not in my okay. initial statement.
Is it since he's referring to the website for Whatcom County with the critical areas ordinance, it's possible for you to bring that up there so we can see the language that he
I might consider a thought here that our critical area ordinance is currently organized with wetlands first, then streams, then slopes. Then, you know, I mean, if we keep the order the same.
How about if Spencer,
sure.
We just go ahead. Growth Management Act of 1990, and then actually just list right out of our table of contents and use the exact same verbiage for each section.
Okay. Yeah.
Is that, we just list them? Does that make sense? So then, like you say, we'd have wetlands, fish and wildlife,
landscape areas, as well. We don't have, yeah. Make sure we use the same term.
Mm-hmm. Right, specific to each right. section within the critical areas ordinance.
Is that your motion now? Do we want to restate the motion?
Would you like me to restate
yeah,
the motion?
Yeah, would you?
Okay. All right. Well, sounds like what we want to do is add at the end of the first sentence, after the parentheses, chapter 17, comma, laws of 1990, add and maybe we should, well, critical areas.
Regulated under this chapter include. And then list.
Sure, there you go. Include and then just reference as they're stated in the table of contents. Wetlands, fish and wildlife habitat. I think it says something else. I abbreviated. Geologically hazardous areas. Exactly like the reference right. there. Yeah. All the way down to critical aquifer recharge areas. We probably don't need to reference special reports or the appendix, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
I mean, there is a working definition, obviously.
Right. So.
I'll second the motion.
Okay. Discussion? All right. Hearing no discussion. All those in favor? Opposed? I'm just trying to be easy to staff. Okay. All right. So let's see. Any other items for section 105, statement of purpose. Okay, moving on. 110, applicability.
Yes, I have a bit here. Another one is similar to Spencer's. I have a copy for the staff if they'd like to have that up front. It's just a sentence to go in front of applicability. I passed out a page to the Planning Commission and it just adds the sentence, the critical area ordinance is an overlay to the zoning ordinance, is focused on the functions and values of ecosystems, not on particular land uses.
So, I'm sorry, which, is that A? Okay.
Yeah, that's A. Just put it as a first sentence.
Do we want to discuss it before the second? Or?
Well, I guess really there's no you can ask questions, I yeah. suppose. It probably should be. If it's not seconded, then it doesn't.
I always thought that development regulations weren't necessarily an overlay to the zoning code, but in fact a required element of the comprehensive plan under growth management. So I'm not sure I understand the provision that says it's an overlay to the zoning code.
You don't
I just don't understand the context because I've never seen a critical areas ordinance as an overlay to the zoning code as opposed to a development regulation that's under the comprehensive plan.
it's actually not a development regulation in the sense that it does isn't like a zoning code requires, but it's commercial or single family or whatever. That's kind of a development regulation, but this is this overlay conditions all development within the county.
All right, I guess, do we have a second? All right, hearing none, it drops to the side. Continuing on in section 110, I guess I would look at paragraph D, and I would actually like to leave that statement as it was previously written without any changes. It looks like it actually changes the exact meaning of the statement, and it seems like they shouldn't require any other permits other than those required by county ordinances, because if we're not governed by county ordinances, my question is, what are we governed by? It's one of those predictability. D as in David. Undo the strikeouts and take it as it existed prior to.
So is that your motion?
Yes, it is.
And can we, I don't know if it has to open discussion first, but from staff, why was it changed?
So in certain instances, for example, Bald and Golden Eagle Protection Act may require that you also get a U.S. Fish and Wildlife permit for some construction activities in the vicinity. And Army Corps permits that may be required for wetland work and those kinds of things?
Yeah, I guess, you know, we've always had requirements for maybe even an HPA or a JARPA, whatever you want to call it. But, you know, unless there was someone that's saying, gee, there's no requirement for it. To me, it just sounds like this kind of opens it up and says, you know, because we obviously reference Department of Fish and Wildlife here. We reference the tribe. We usually reference some of the other agencies that may come into play in the approval process. And so it just seems to me that this really kind of, like I said, opens it up. It's a little confusing.
Would it make sense or be incorrect for it to just expand if it's not required by county ordinance or state or federal law? You covered it.
I mean, I guess you could say, right, required by county ordinance, comma, state or federal law, and then leave everything else written the same. How does that sound?
I would second that.
Okay, so I amended the motion, and there's a second. Discussion?
Yes. It seems to me that the sentence as is kind of alerts people that that's the case, and if you're an independent builder who isn't familiar with Kitsap County's culture, you may this may be helpful to let them know that there are additional permits that might be required. I'm trying to wrap myself around why this is offensive, particularly.
Well, I guess it's just odd when you're referring to an ordinance and says, hey, you know what, you're going to have to get other permits, really not sure what they are, but you have to get other permits, and they're not in our ordinance. And, you know, if we're referencing state or federal, it just says, okay, you might have to get other permits, not just the ones by the county, but it's a little more definitive. That was my only thought, because like I said, this seems to change the entire.
Well, I would agree with that. When you start with something that you may, it feels like you're almost wasting your time reading it, because you read it and then go, but it doesn't apply. You know, at least if you're referencing a law, whether it be county, state, or federal, it's something definitive that it feels like you can go and you can check that out. But having that may up front really is a huge qualifier for anything that follows after.
Further discussion? Okay. Hearing none, all those in favor? Looks like it was unanimous. Okay. Moving right along. I guess I should make sure. Did you get that?
Is that correct? I'm sorry. Can you confirm that what I'm typing up here is correct?
This title. Which.
Can you point out where you just.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure.
I've added the state or federal law. Okay. Is that what was.
No, it should be what was crossed out. So it should be this title does not require any permits in addition to those otherwise required by county ordinance, state, or federal law.
Yes. Thank you. Okay. Moving on. 1900.115 relationship to other county regulations. Okay. 120 review authority. Item C. The last paragraph, I would propose we remove.
Is that item 2 out of section D on time limitation? Is that where
you
are?
I'm sorry, no, we're on review authority, 0.120. Item
That's
C.
Under A then?
A, B, C, page 6, lines 7 and 8.
The entire section?
No, I'm just saying lines 7 and 8.
So what is your proposal?
That those be removed.
Which all of?
Line 7 and line 8 in their entirety. And it, to me, it's like going back. You have conditions of approval, and then all of a sudden, you know, it seems like it opens the door to go back to a prior approval and say, gee, you know, this is no longer good. You have to do something else. And it just seems like it's a backpedaling potentially on an approval. Is there a second? Okay.
Can I ask from the county, how would you anticipate this in a real life scenario? How would this be used?
And while they're thinking, and once again, it seems odd, where projects have been approved, so the project's been approved with conditions to protect critical areas under previous protection policies in effect prior to the ordinance codified in this title, those conditions will apply. Nevertheless, so in other words, it sounds like you're saying, you know, even though I just said that, that really doesn't apply. And then it says, you know, if it can be determined that they've now come to the whatever, thinking that there's some detrimental impact, you can revisit the approval. So it just seems like a bad statement.
Yeah. Actually, I think approvals can be revisited. There's provision for that. And also, we're talking about an environmental protection consideration, which is maybe a little confusing as the current court cases ramble through. The latest decision, which is supposed challenged and reviewed, but it's a Supreme Court decision, unanimously decided that such regulations as environmental protection relation regulations do not nest. And so that, if new information, best available science indicates that you've got a problem that you got to deal with, that is a reviewable situation, and it will change your permit.
Well, I guess as far as I know, that information is not being presented to us. There's no court findings that I have that's presented here. And I guess I'm looking at it, and it's an approval. At what point in time do you say, gee, you know, are we halfway through construction? All of a sudden, oh, you know what? We have to change the whole thing. So it just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, just because I have read it, if you have begun construction, you're good to go. But if you are sitting on a permit that's old and new information's come along.
Well, but the thing is, though, the permits all have timelines that are already established in them. And it's probably another court case that would be heard. But, I mean, if the permit and the person hasn't started with the year and the permit's still in place, you know, the idea of coming back, I don't think is something we should open up. Yes.
So I just think the intent here is that some of these projects can go on for years and years. And if there are, you know, findings that come up, technical findings that come up that would suggest that a particular practice that was approved when that project originally came through and was permitted, particularly in the case of land use rather than construction, that there may be a necessity to recondition that project based on new information.
If it's that important, I'm just tossing it out there, if that section is that important, should it not, I guess, be its own section rather than tacked on to C? You're basically making a statement. If you're looking at that in itself, you're making a statement.
Let me go over a scenario that does occasionally apply or may apply to this. For instance, if we have a platted property, had preliminary plat approval, and that we have an older wetland report, we ask for a wetland addendum, and then all of a sudden there have been, you know, extenuating circumstances, say a beaver has moved in and created additional wetland perimeter, that type of thing, and we do ask for in older plats that if they're going to the final plat procedure, that we ask for an addendum to the wetland report, and that's very typical. If a report gets long in the tooth, if you will, that particular report, to meet the criteria, we ask for the addendum to the wetland report, and at that time, it could potentially change. And so we can't have a subdivision that's now going to be built in a wetland. We have the situation where the site has changed, and there may need to be a revision to that. If the plat hadn't ever been built and the beaver managed, if that was a potential possibility, but the fact would be that the natural environment has changed on the property, and we have a situation where we can't introduce housing in a wetland. It's just, it would not be feasible, nor would anybody want to have their backyard with a beaver dam behind it. So we have scenarios that I can see where just having this state, this kind of blanket statement that, you know, and as Jim was saying, this idea about plats, you know, plats are permits, you know, the permit by itself, but plats have a certain expectation of vesting, but things do change. We have situations in the geotechnical world as well, where on-site constraints, say we've had an earthquake or some series of events in between the plat, preliminary plat, and then the final plat approval, we also require revised geotechnical reports as well. So we have situations that critical areas do change throughout a permitting process. And if I think that if we just had removed that statement, it may be problematic for future development, you know, in relation to safety.
Jim?
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry.
Aren't there situations where large projects are given preliminary approval and then the preliminary approval is vested because small phases get finalized, but the other phases can date back, you know, a decade or more. And I can see that it might be a situation where this would be necessary as well. Because I recall when I was working, there were a lot of big projects that had preliminary approval and only certain phases had been developed, but the county considered the subsequent phases to be valid as preliminary approvals. So I think that is another scenario where this might be.
Yes, we have plats that have developers agreement, and those developer agreements often last for 20 to 30 years for the phasing of the project. But 20 to 30 years, things can change drastically. And in those scenarios where something has, say, completed phase one, and then there's phase two and three that are still laying out there, we're going to ask for revised reports. Yes, they may be vested for stormwater control and that type of thing, but if it relates to the safety of that particular project, we're not going to not ask for additional investigations to be provided to us for that next phasing. You know, the phasing often occurs in individual site development activity permits, and those site development activity permits also need to make sure that those residences are safe as well.
Sure.
I think the case Tom's talking about is Snohomish County versus the Puget or the Pollution Control Hearings Board was a case that came down at the end of 2016. And what the case found is that you do not vest into stormwater, new stormwater, or the old stormwater manual. You are left with on the new manual. The case did not address critical areas ordinance. The land use mid-year was this last weekend, and this was a big issue at the mid-year. And so the case does not stand for the proposition that you can't vest in a critical areas ordinance. That's unsettled. So my own thought is, why does Kitsap County want to be the test case in terms of saying, no, you can't vest? Basically, the way I read this, you say you don't vest in the critical areas ordinance. I think it's undecided, and I wouldn't want to be the test case.
You know, and if I could add, we're making reference to a preliminary plat. With a preliminary plat, you still come through with final construction documents, and you go through the SDAP process. So you still have an ability to go ahead and request, you know, additional studies at that point in time. So it's not like you can start building homes. You just have the preliminary approval. So, you know, this just seems very open-ended that something that isn't necessarily even a preliminary plat could be a commercial project. And, you know, with this is the way it's stated, they could be just about ready to break ground, had the approval issued 3 or 4 months ago, and all of a sudden go, hey, you know what, now you need to change something. I just think it's open-ended. But.
And can I ask you a question?
Yes.
In the SDAP, doesn't that expire too at a certain point?
It does.
You have to make a move or put something in the ground or start some project.
That is correct.
So or you would have to reapply, and then I assume be subject to.
You'd have to go through the whole process again.
That's updated and whatever the current standards would be.
Correct. Okay, I guess all those in favor of striking lines 7 and 8 in entirety, raise their hand. 1, 2, 3, 4. Opposed? 2.
For my notes, can you clarify who made the second on that?
Who made the second? I think, was that you, Gina? Did you make the second?
No, I did on the last one. I don't know if we formally had. So I will second retroactively.
So, did I get that correct? The vote was 4-2.
That is correct.
And okay.
Yes.
And do we need 5 on this situation?
It's not the case.
Once we have, we do 5 for a quorum. But once we have a quorum, it's majority the vote.
Actually, I think our bylaws read differently, but
Well, we should go ahead and I guess make sure we're clear on that. Well, while they're looking, you're looking at that, Jim? Okay. Shall we keep going? So, paragraph D, item 2, C, and D, I would recommend once again that we keep the duration at the prior durations. On item C, I would leave it at 60 days. And item D, I would leave it at 30 days.
And the county, was this changed to comply with, was it just simply changed, or was it changed to comply with some new mandate?
The change was made to be consistent with Title 21, has similar language.
Okay.
And actually, the way I read it, it seems like the development community would like favor the first way rather than the second.
Well, and actually, if it's consistent with Title 21, then I'll go ahead and remove my motion because we should be consistent. Okay. Let's see, I guess heading through, anything else in that particular section? Moving on to exemptions, point 125. All right, moving on to point 130, standards for existing development.
You want to do yours, Richard, first? Which part is yours? Is your, on which page are you here?
I can address my concern is if looking at the matrix. I'm working off the matrix.
Okay.
I thought that was the easiest. In terms of the additional changes the staff had made, there's a requirement now that if a building is destroyed, under the proposed change, not only does it have to not be enlarge or increase the nonconformity, but it also must match the configuration existing immediately prior to the time the structure was damaged or destroyed. I just think that's really harsh on a homeowner. You're saying, I appreciate we're going to protect the critical area. We're not going to make it any more nonconforming. We're not going to let you go further into the critical area. But why do I have to build the 1920s house exactly the way it was when it burned down? Okay, that just strikes me as let's hit somebody while they're down. I would remove my amendment does is simply remove the language to configurations existing immediately prior to the time the structure was damaged or destroyed. I can't think of a reason you wouldn't let a homeowner change the location of a bedroom or expand, make design changes after a fire.
So I guess for clarity, you're looking at A4?
I am.
And you want to modify that?
What I'm modifying is that, from the last staff change, and I'm just omitting the two configurations existing immediately prior to the time the structure was damaged or destroyed. Still requiring you can't enlarge or expand it, the nonconformity.
I'll second that.
Discussion?
Can I ask, you mentioned here six of the necessary permits within 6 months of the date.
I'm not sure that's the right time, but I'm certainly open to an amendment that expands the time for application.
Well, I'm looking at it says it talks about. Current one talks about reconstruction is commenced within 24 months.
Right.
And I guess having been somebody who's had a house burned down, you've ever dealt with insurance, it can be very, very difficult to get them to move and to start that reconstruction. So I would hate things outside the homeowner's control to be controlling that. I, at least in my experience, it took a long time. So I would, I guess, make an amendment to the amendment that it be consistent at 24 months, if you wouldn't object to that.
No objection.
And I'll second that.
Okay. Any, I guess, discussion to increase it to 24 months? If not, let's vote on that first, correct? All those in favor of increasing to 24 months from 6 months? Unanimous. Back to the original motion. Is that correctly stated, the way you see it up there?
Well, given the language, let's see. I would have left the as I have, Kathleen, it's, I would allow it to be restored or replaced instead of using the word reconstructed, and omit the reference to, which line is the, okay, I'm sorry, I'm in the wrong line. Okay, got it.
Can I make a point of clarification, yeah, sure. though? The 6 months, right now, the way that the code reads, it's saying that the reconstruction has to be commenced within 24 months. Right now we're saying get your applications in within 6 months, and then you have 2 years from permit issuance or after appeal. So it's actually providing more time than what the code currently allows.
But you're saying you still have, you have permits in within 6 months of the date of the damage?
Correct, and that's consistent with what we've provided in Title 22 for our Australian Master Program, but it's also... what we're saying is we understand it's going to take time. If you can get, you get the permits in within 6 months, then you have time. And it's, you know, you basically, the clock stops until you actually get your permits or you're through appeals. And then you have 2 full years for reconstruction.
Yeah. I shared Gina's thought on that, though, Kathleen. I just went through, we had the fire down at the wedding facility down in Port Orchard, south of Port Orchard.
Mm-hmm.
Getting the insurance company to step in and say, yes, I'm going to take the matter. It took 9 months. So we didn't have insurance coverage for 9 months to even think about filing for permits.
So two things. One is that right now, you would, the way the code is written, you would have 24 months for everything, including getting your permits and reconstruction.
Mm-hmm.
This is adding 6 months. Something that you could consider is that Title 17 actually provides for 1 year. The reason we were saying 6 months is just because of the sensitive and dynamic nature of these areas, such as our shorelines and critical areas. We want to make sure that things aren't shifting too much so you can get vested in that location. Does that make sense? So if you're waiting a whole, if you're having to wait a whole year.
But again, if I don't have the insurance money to apply, I've lost everything. I'm saying, boy, we're giving you a big break. We're making you apply within 6 months, even though you don't have any money. It's good for you because now you can bust under the old code. Well, that doesn't help me if I don't.
And the other thing to be considered is you also have to hire an architect to draw your plans, a structural engineer. So there's a handful of things that need to be done. So, you know, we're not trying to obviously shorten the period. We're just concerned 6 months, even for the submittal of permits, is not adequate time.
So we could be consistent with 17 then and say 1 year.
I think that probably makes more sense, yes.
Agree.
You don't mind amending your motion?
No.
Okay.
I amend my motion to reflect what Kathleen has put on the board.
Okay. And then the rest of it as stated up there, is that satisfactory?
That is correct, on the side.
Okay. Any further discussion? Okay, all those in favor of the motion? Unanimous. Okay.
And one note, I was looking at your bylaws. Just so you know, it states that as it now exists or here is hereafter amended, the Planning Commission's recommendation regarding the comprehensive plan amendments, or development regulations shall be by affirmative vote of not less than the majority of the total members of the Planning Commission.
Okay.
And the total number is 9, so the total number is 9.
Oh.
So
not the planning member.
Total president. Numbers of planning commission.
No, total number six. Right? Seven. What is it?
A simple majority is allowed for regular business, but when it comes to comprehensive plan and the development regulations, it's a majority of the total members. So you'd need five to carry a motion when we're dealing with Title 17 or the critical area ordinance or the comp plan.
So we had a problem on the last one. Can I suggest that we table any that we don't have a five vote? And take it up on May 23rd? Is that an option available to us?
I suppose it's an option that's available. The only question is, yeah, who's going to be here and whether we're going to need the 23rd.
People who aren't here today might have to recuse themselves.
Yeah, that's one thing. It is tough. I'm so certainly with only six members. I mean, it is going to be a little difficult.
Yeah.
For six members present.
You're right, and I. That's really why we need all people on board for these kinds of things in order to get business done.
Right.
Where we have differences of opinion, legitimate difference of opinion, and we're going to have plenty today, it's very difficult to pass anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a couple. I think we'll probably go down 3-3 or maybe 2-4.
Mm-hmm.
So.
So the rules for reconsideration is that a motion for reconsideration may be made only at a regular or special meeting by a member who voted on the prevailing side. The reasons to reconsider must be stated in the motion of reconsideration and must be seconded. When a member who cannot move for reconsideration believes there are valid reasons for reconsideration, he or she should, time and opportunity permitted, try to persuade a member who voted on the prevailing side to make such a motion. A second for reconsideration may be made by any member of the commission. The making of a motion for reconsideration and its second is subject to expiry at the conclusion of the next regularly scheduled meeting following the meeting at which the motion was originally voted upon. So you can defer the actual voting for the next meeting. And if the motion for reconsideration is seconded and is timely, the reconsideration must be heard and voted upon at the same meeting.
So in this particular case, the prevailing side, because we didn't have five votes, was no. So Tom or Jim would have to bring up the motion for reconsideration.
No, I think the other way around.
Right, the prevailing side, correct?
There was no prevailing
side. There was no prevailing side, I guess, the vote.
Well, I guess that's not true. There's a prevailing side,
right?
I mean, you just because it wasn't able to be adopted because we didn't have five, there's still a prevailing side from the majority standpoint.
Correct. If the rule is that the prevailing side is the only one, I guess, that could reconsider, it would
be Tom.
It'd be somebody coming back and changing their mind and saying, wait, I'm unhappy that it went that way.
It just does bring up, again, what I mentioned earlier, that we're missing three people. That's one-third of our whole staff,
mm-hmm.
our whole set. And it's very, very difficult to achieve controversial stuff today.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess just so we're clear, so once again, are we saying the prevailing side? I understand we don't have what we're calling a majority because of the numbers that are here, but you still have a majority of the members present. Is that not considered a prevailing side to even do anything towards reconsideration?
Well, I don't think you could actually decide on the motion because you didn't have a majority of the whole body supporting it. So doesn't the motion fail? So there's really nothing to really reconsider on a failed motion.
But can you bring the motion again?
That I don't think we have covered in your procedures. I don't see anything that would prevent that.
I think to the extent you wish to reconsider, something didn't pass because we didn't have enough people here. There's nothing to preclude you from bringing it up again on the 23rd if you have enough people.
Okay. Yes. Yeah, I mean, it does seem odd. Every time you had two meetings, you could always go back and revisit every single topic you discussed because you were unhappy with the results.
Right. Well, I think that is going to be the case for everything that we vote on that doesn't get at least five votes. I mean, we're going to go through a lot of stuff today and maybe into tonight, and there's going to be several things that we're just not going to get five people to agree with, I think. And so we're going to be able to bring those back up again. Maybe we'll have a different six next time.
There is a purpose statement in the section of your rules that says the purpose of reconsidering a vote is to permit correction, to take into account added information or a changed situation that has developed since the taking of the vote, i.e. attendance.
I guess if there's no definitions, you could argue that.
Okay. Well, I guess, should we track those items that don't pass?
I think so.
I track those in the minute.
Okay.
Which pretty much
I guess the thing is we should say those items that don't pass because we did not achieve a majority either for or against.
Right.
Yes. Okay. All right.
Okay.
Making some good headway.
So this one, we only have one.
Correct.
That's
right.
So far, right.
Tom's ready, though.
Well, I just have a feeling. this next one might be one. Who knows? It's in the same section. It's actually number three of that same section, nonconforming structures. I gave you the print, and all the red strikeout does is eliminates the ability to expand the construction on existing single family dwellings further into the critical area. So it eliminates that. That's what that does, and I'll let you read it.
Speak to the motion? Okay. Just tell us about the reason I got this one.
I could if it had a second.
Oh. I'll second it.
Okay, second it. the reason is that the language as it reads is it says, well, we're not going to consider further intruding into the associated buffer with this expansion so long as the footprint of the structure is not increased by more than 20%. To me, increasing the footprint by more than 20% into the critical area is incursion. And so, what my language says is that the new construction can go ahead, but it can't further intrude into the critical area. It's already in there a little bit, or maybe a lot, and so why allow it more? How does that protect critical area?
So Tom, I guess question, I'm reading the statement as it exists, and it says, as the footprint of the structure lying within the critical area or its buffer is not increased by more than 20% and no portion of the new structure is located closer to the critical area than the existing structure.
That's correct. I read the same way.
Right. So, I mean, isn't it stating the exact same thing that
you
did, just differently?
No. Okay. Say you're into the critical area. Under the good old days where you could go maybe up a long way into the critical area and you're disrupting it. What this allows is you to increase your footprint, increase that incursion another 20% as long as you're a little bit back from what you've already disturbed. I mean, I can draw some pictures, but as you see, start to build a house, say it's a rectangle, and one half of the rectangle is in the critical area presently. Well, you can, according to this, you can expand your previous incursion under the present rules by another 20%, and it's okay with the county.
I don't think that's what it says. It says no portion of the new structure is located closer to the critical area.
Okay, so you're saying that it reads that nothing would be in the critical area at all?
It says no portion of the new structure is located closer to the critical area. So if you have a house that's right up against the buffer and you add 20%, it has to happen, you know, away from the critical area is what that says to me.
Now, as long as the footprint of the structure line within the critical area or the buffer is not increased. It's the part that's in, it's the language in the code here now says, so long as the footprint in the structure line within the critical area of the, or its buffer is not increased by more than 20%. So that tells me that the portion of the house that is in the critical area can be increased 20%.
Well, that'd be fine if that was a period at the end of 20%, but it's not. Then it says, and no portion of the structure located. You know, I mean, I guess maybe we need to rewrite. I think it's more of a clarification. I think they're trying to say the same thing.
So it's what, maybe somebody correct me, what you're thinking is that if you have an existing house, can't move this way into the buffer, but you could move this way along the buffer.
That's what this says, yes.
But it's not encroaching it any further. Well, correct me if I'm wrong. Oh, wait, here's a picture.
Yeah, here we got a picture. Okay. Thank you, Jim.
The podium mic also works, if that's easier.
So the small box to the right is the 20% addition, and you're saying you don't think that should be allowed within the buffer, even though it's not getting any closer, it's still within the buffer. Is that?
That's what I'm saying, yes.
And I guess my concern, you know, is we've heard a lot from homeowners, you know, both that want to make sure that they're protecting the environment and those who don't want their property rights taken away. And I see this, I'm not seeing the strikeout, so this is how it's been existing, and the county hasn't found it to be a problem to our current critical areas or hasn't found it to be a problem to our environment to allow construction to go on in this matter. So trying to speak on behalf of the representatives in my district, I think that I wouldn't support it because it seems that county believes it's been fine, it's been consistent with the critical areas, it's not causing damage, and I don't know that homeowners would appreciate us taking away more of their ability to develop in light of so many regulations that already exist. That's my take.
Any further discussion? Okay.
Wait a minute, I'll go ahead and discuss a little bit further because because just if you're trying to protect critical areas, you don't build more in the critical area. That is not a property right. That is a property wrong. And we've done a lot of that already. And I see this as facilitating some, just a small bit more, but it is a small bit more, and I'm not at ease with further incursion to the critical area zones.
Yeah, I guess this is probably, you know, a very small percentage of what would actually take place, but anyway, any further discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor of the proposed amendment? Opposed? 1-4-5 against. Continuing on in section 0.130, standards and existing development. Paragraph B, danger tree removal, habitable structure. I guess I would propose that we remove habitable structure.
Where are you now?
Page 9, 130, standards for existing development.
Gotcha.
We're just actually, next paragraph down, major paragraph B, danger tree removal.
Gotcha.
You know, it used to say property. I guess I'm looking at, you know, what if you have a well house or something else they would consider, you know, not habitable, and something's going to fall on it. I just think there's things that you should be able to protect, structures, even though they're not habitable by human beings, that you would want to go ahead and protect. So I think that needs to just, I'm okay with what's stated as property, to be honest with you.
I heard you, your motion was remove the term habitable structure.
Correct. And
well,
just leave
that
property,
no structures.
I guess.
I think you just want to remove the word habitable, right?
Yeah, I guess so, yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Actually, no, you're probably right. That way it defines not just property. So yeah, I amend my motion to say, to strike habitable and just leave it as structure. Z, plural.
I'll say.
Okay. Discussion?
So would this include a gazebo out in the view platform and a place to sit around a barbecue? Is that need protection also? I mean, where do we go with this? How far do you go with that?
And we could probably have a 20% increase if they wanted to add on to it. It was in the buffer, too. I'm sorry. Yes, I guess then it would include a gazebo. Further discussion? All those in favor of the motion? Opposed? 5-1. Let's see, going to variances, 0.135.
Several.
Okay. If you want to just point out the paragraphs, if you would, please.
Yes.
Starting with variances A1, the print is in front of you. Do you have a copy up front? I can give you one if you want one. No, I don't. You don't need to put it up if you don't want to. I don't care. I just want to make sure you had it. The red, most of the red is deletion, and the addition is economic use or value is put in its place. I know we'll get references to a court case or two on this with Lucas, et cetera. But wait a minute, did I make the motion?
No, I didn't make the motion.
No, you need to make a motion first.
I need to make a motion first, don't I? Yes, that's right. I move that the language A1 be changed to reflect what I have passed out in print to Planning Commission members.
Is there a second?
Discussion, I'll second.
Okay.
Okay, the discussion here. The red part is mostly deletions of the rights and privileges enjoyed by the properties in the vicinity and other language there, but not of a concern. Yes, it would be wrong to deprive the subject property of economic use or value. That's true. That's property right. But it gets a little bit vague when you start talking about properties in the vicinity, when the vicinity is an undefined term. And if there are there, if there is, say, one property in a vicinity that is violating the critical area zone or ordinance or buffer, that should not give other properties the right to continue that same violation. So that's why I am proposing this amendment.
Discussion?
This strikes me as language that the lawyers need to address, you know, economic use or value versus property rights enjoyed by others.
Having done lots of this litigation before, I can, the first thing I would tell you is that when I've been before the hearing examiner never has any problem saying, hey, one case doesn't get you there. You know, what they're looking at is character of the neighborhood type thing. So I haven't had a hearing examiner have any problem interpreting what rights and privileges enjoyed by others in the neighborhood. Certainly Lucas comes out of the economic use, as you've pointed out. But this is language we've been used to dealing with in Kitsap County from time immemorial. So it's just standard fare.
Yeah. And go ahead.
So are you, as somebody with experience practicing in this area, you think that it's good to keep the language?
I think it is. I think it's an opportunity. If in fact every other house in the area has this thing and you're not allowed to do it, that's certainly something that ought to be taken into consideration.
That's true, and that often is and has been in the case. I can think of a few places, but the concern is that it will not be the one case. It could be a person coming up with their argument with saying in borderline situations. This seems to open the door, and actually, it still allows a person to make that development for economic use and value, but not basing it on previous violations of the critical area in Kitsap County. Even I know it has been the pattern in Kitsap County to violate the critical areas in the past, and I'm just saying that I am not supporting that.
Further discussion?
I think that it looks like by striking out that language, we're taking away some discretion from the administrative law judges that was intended to be built into the law for those judges to exercise that discretion, hamstringing the judge. So I guess that causes me some concern to invest a certain amount of respect in the decisions that are made in the process so that the citizens can at least exercise the process and go through the process and, you know, have their arguments be made, have them be heard. And I don't want the situation to end up where the ALJ says, I have no discretion. This is what's mandated.
I guess I have a question. Would all of these situations go before a hearing examiner, or would they go before, would they be a type 1 or a type 2? I mean, that is a question. I know that it should go before a type 3, but on the other hand, it might not. No administrative judge around.
Okay, well, ready for the vote? Are you going to? I thought maybe they were discussing the were you going to share? Are you discussing whether that was which type of an action that would be? Yes.
Yeah, we were just.
Okay. No comments? No, okay. Okay.
You don't want to share with the rest of the class?
Okay, so All those in favor of the motion as proposed? All those against? 1, 4, 5 against. Okay. Continuing on in variances, anything else?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
On the same page, page 9, this is line 30, number 4, striking the word the and inserting the word a permitted use.
Is there a second? Are we contemplating or are you still reading? No, okay. Once again, I guess, is there a second? Okay. Continuing on, I think you had another item in that same section.
Yes, I do, number 5. Okay. This one is just asking the question whether or not to amend the definition to practical alternative and reasonable alternative now or later. It seems to fit now in a sense that this is the first time that those terms have been used, and I have some language that might change the meaning of the sentence. What is the desire of the group? I mean, it can come up later and make no difference to me, but now is when you can begin to see how, if you voted in favor of it, what the difference would be. It'd be now, or I can wait. It doesn't matter.
Well, so you want to go up to the definitions and talk about the definitions and how they relate to this comment?
Only the definition of practical alternative and reasonable alternative, since those two terms are used in this sentence. But if you don't want to do it now, I can do it later.
Well, that's fine. Let's go ahead.
Okay, this would be on page 34, line 19 of the draft. Where is a practical alternative? I am suggesting subtracting the word less and inserting the words minimal and mitigatable.
So you want to read that sentence, if you don't mind, Tom?
Don't mind at all. A practical alternative means an alternative that is available and capable of being carried out after taking into consideration cost, existing technology, and logistics in light of overall project purposes and having minimal or mitigatable impacts to critical areas. A practical alternative may include an area not owned by the applicant for which an easement has been obtained in order to fulfill the basic purpose of the proposed activity.
Is there a second? You don't like the word less?
That's what I'm sitting here kind of looking at. I don't care for, I guess, how that reads. I don't know if I want minimal and mitigatable, but
I can explain that. To me, it's not practical if it is not minimal and it is not mitigatable. It is not practical in my mind. It may be practical in the builder's mind, but it's not practical in my mind.
Then you have to define minimal and mitigatable. It kind of snowballs.
Mitigatable is pretty easy. Yeah. Minimal is,
but it has to be both.
Yes.
We pick pay attention very much to ands and semicolons and all of that. So minimal or mitigatable might. But when you have, I don't know.
Well, I guess the question is now less impact. So you can look at something and say, okay, this does appear to have less impacts than the other alternative. But then when you go to minimal, it's a little more subjective. Minimal to that person is not maybe minimal to this person. Or to say less, I think that's fairly easy to define, and you can just weigh one option versus another option.
Is ultimately your goal, you want it to be mitigatable? I mean, are you...
Oh, yes. You know, I don't like mitigation, but on the other hand, if it is mitigatable, that's a better option to allow things to go forward than to not have it. So, yeah. You know, I think it has, you know, I was outed from the podium not too long ago as being a tree hugger, and I'm true to that form. I fully agree to that. I never denied that.
Swell up a little bit. Well, so let's look at this. So no other practical or reasonable alternative. So we could say no other minimal. So you're saying your variance now has to be minimal and mitigatable.
Yes. Yes.
As opposed to practical.
Since you use this all the time, can I ask your opinion on
it? Yeah, I think using the term minimal is zero. So, I mean, it kind of reduces the concept of practical. If it's minimal, it's not practical. Those are mutually exclusive terms in my mind. But,
so, should mitigatable, or could it be part of it if it's less, or it's mitigatable? Of course, to me, that broadens it a bit. But.
Yeah, I suggest, again, this the variance criteria are criteria that, this is the criteria we use forever. So, coming in and futzing with it here, we have a process that works pretty well, I think, on variances, and so I would be reluctant to make changes of the kind that are here.
Well, and I guess along those same lines, I would just say general comments. If it's something that hasn't posed a problem and staff's not proposing it for change, I think we really need to look at it, because this has been in effect for a while, and to look at is this something that's necessary and makes sense? Is it an area that's caused problems? So I think we need to look at that every time, because there's a handful of items being changed. We really should be asking why.
And the term less is pretty clear.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I can see how that would work, but I mean, let's say you are your first effort before the practical alternative only reduces the impact a little bit. Now that certainly is less than a whole lot. And
the reality of a variance, of course, is I've got to meet all five criteria to get a variance, and so what. And there's an incredibly heavy burden to get there as it is. So throwing in this other concept that appears to me to be not really a practical alternative, it's a no alternative. I mean, that's minimal means minimum. What's the difference between minimal and minimum? And that kind of gets rid of the concept of practical. So I think the standard already is set. Is difficult enough for someone who truly has an unfair situation. And so, again, messing with the criteria I don't think is warranted.
Okay, shall we vote? Let's see. We're looking at modifying the definition of practical alternative. All those in favor? Opposed? 1, 4, 5 against. And I guess since we're over here, do you want to go ahead, Tom?
That's right. Reasonable alternative, page 35, line 27. Reasonable alternative means an activity. Oh, wait a minute. Yeah, I move that we change the language to read meet a reasonable alternative means an activity that could feasibly attain an allowed use but without environmental degradation.
Is there a second? One last time, is there a second? Okay, on to the next item. Let's see, I guess, go ahead, Tom, I think you have one on page 10, is that correct?
I think so, yeah.
Now, this is just adding another line to what the county has provided for its variance code. And I'm moving that line be added, item number 7 under the variances 135A.7 or parent 7. All buffer reductions in excess of 25% are variances that require a type 3 process.
Is there a second? All right, hearing none, we move on. Anything else in 135 variances? Moving on to 140, reasonable use exception. Okay, continuing on, point 145, special use review.
May I ask a question of staff here? Is who initiates the this sort of thing? It's a new section, and I don't know anything about it.
It's actually not new. It's revised from the wetland chapter. We moved it so that it applies to any critical area. So the special use review would be something like a revision to an existing application, for example. So,
but who is allowed to initiate a special use review?
Well, that would be from an applicant who is asking for something that's potentially outside of the direct code interpretation. For instance, what is typical for a special use review would be clean stormwater that would be placed into a wetland buffer, mm-hmm. so that buffer can receive clean water, from a site, that type of thing. So the special use review is typically applied from the developer.
So the special use review is in another location currently. Can you tell us where can we look at that? Because is this a total rewrite of that entire section?
It's a cut and paste. This part that you see underlined is new to help clarify that it is a process to an underlying permit. It's not a new permit. The added language was just to clarify, but other than that, it is cut and paste and then substituting wetland with critical area or wetland buffer with just buffer.
And that special use review, do you know where that is?
19200.230.
Page? 19200, okay. Yeah.
Section. That's that part of all the charts. Yeah, once you find that section, it may take a couple minutes.
19200.
I know. very bottom of page 62 is where the title is, and then it moves on to 63 for the majority.
Okay.
Incidentally, I found this particular section rather confusing as it starts on page 48 and goes all the way down to page 62.
Right. Any comments on that? All right, moving on. Point 150, appeals.
The same question here. Is this, again, only the applicant that is the affected party? And if so, why don't we name that, the applicant? I don't know what it means, really.
The appeals process would also apply to anyone with standing to challenge. I don't know why they, from my review of it, I don't have the exact language in front of me, but I think it would not be limited to the applicant, but also affect other
parties. Kind of why I asked the question, because I was not sure what we're talking about. And if in the first case with the, where it sounded to me like the person who initiates the review is the applicant only, that is also maybe a person with standing might want to initiate an action.
Well, I guess the special use review, when you say who's going to require that, that's obviously going to be someone on the regulatory side requiring the special use review. That's not going to be the applicant, right? I realize we're just backpedaling.
But on the special use review?
Right. Well, I mean, there's not many people that submitted.
Didn't I just hear it was the applicant?
What's that?
I thought I just heard that was the applicant who would initiate the special use review.
Right. No, I understand that, but I guess he just made a comment. The special use review is going to be a request made by staff for additional information, or something that maybe is a non-standard requirement for a permit, right?
But the appeal process, again, is not designed, it's not limited, as said, to special use reviews. It would apply across anyone with standing to challenge a critical areas decision. So I don't. And I think it's in conformity that that's what 2104 provides. And that's the appeal process for everybody.
Okay, I guess moving on to point 150, or?
Did I get an answer to that? That on the affected party? I mean, I don't have a motion on this. I'm just trying to get some clarification that it may be appealed by the applicant or affected party. What does that mean?
Can you clarify where you're looking, which section? Are you in special use review or are you
I'm
in
look, appeals? No, I'm looking in appeals 150. That's not
related to the special use review. No, I went ahead and jumped back because he had commented also that the special use review is initiated by the applicant. And I was actually saying, I don't think that's really the case. You know, the applicant may bring up an idea that they want to do. It's more or less likely staff's going to say, well, this is something we need a special use review on. And the request is going to be made by staff, then executed by the applicant to satisfy their concerns. But like I said, I was just trying to clarify that because he made that comment regarding special use review. But now we're talking about appeals. And I think as Richard indicated, the appeal can be the applicant or it can be anybody that has standing on a particular project, correct? Anybody can file an appeal for the correct. Most part.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
At the risk of slowing our progress here, I need to move my car in the next 5 minutes or I might get a ticket.
A brief break. Yeah, well, I guess if we need to take a quick break, so to go ahead and move our vehicles.
Is that okay?
Sure. 10 minutes? Okay.